masculinity is important again. It was lost for a few years, maybe a decade, but it feels like men want to be men and women want men to be men.
We're underestimating the importance of masculinity. There will always be toxic, dominating, controlling, aggressive men who need to be neutralized. You know, you never have to look like you're aggressive if someone else is defending you. You never have to develop your strength if someone else is being strong for you.
You're listening to the Mind Shift podcast. My name is Aaron McManus, and I'm here with my dad, Earl McManus. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. A little chilly.
It's a little chilly. And it's a little rainy.
Yeah, it's very rainy here in LA.
Yeah, I'm still waking up a little bit. We're getting in the groove of things. We had our arena community call this morning, which was awesome. And it's always awesome. That's easy, but we have a great crew of guys on that.
It is. I love the arena. And we had some great questions today.
Yeah, we really did.
Yeah. I mean, no matter how meaningful the presentations may be, I think the questions are the magic. Just, I love when people ask questions about what they're facing, and it just has application to everyone.
Yeah. If you haven't checked out the arena, you need to. And we're also going to open up our registration for our conference 2024 in October 10th, 11th, and 12th in Los Angeles. The arena, you don't want to miss it.
Yeah. And in between now and then, we have our monthly arena summits.
Yes, which is really exciting.
We
broke down the conference to once a month events that we're doing with the different speakers that engage in our conference.
Yeah, I'm excited. We have Edwin Ariave coming up in the next one. He's going to talk about having an entrepreneurial mind. Incredible guy, starting from scratch, from really a deficit of poverty.
Yeah.
It's and having this incredible company.
That's a week from, I guess it's Wednesday, so February 28th.
Yeah, it's going to be very good. And I think it's really exciting because a lot of people have said, hey, are there ways we can connect, you know, that either are short term or more accessible? And the summit is a way you can do. You can join either for a one-time event, or you can join it for all 12 summits for a year.
Yeah. This is a little off topic and not necessarily what we want to talk about, but you had a clip go to like 4.5 million views.
That's insane. Instagram.
Did you notice that this morning?
I think Austin just told me this morning. I was absolutely shocked.
Did you catch it, Austin? I mean, that's pretty wild. I kind of want to watch it in a week.
It's the clip on masculinity, right? Which is, it's just so interesting.
Men have the courage to love. And I think men who are insecure, who are hollow in their masculinity. I'm
commenting. I didn't realize this.
Want to be worshipped. But men who are rich and mature in their manhood, you know, the power of loving. It's different than wanting to be loved. It's actually having the courage to love. I think the most masculine.
It's a great, 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 great clip. Congrats.
I don't think I would have ever guessed that a clip on masculinity would go viral and have millions of downloads, but it lets you know what conversations people are really interested in.
It really does, doesn't it? And that's a conversation we filmed last October at the arena. The whole conference was over and we had met, I think it was Jordan Mulligan, right?
Jordan,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and then through Lewis Howe. He decided to do a little he does like documentaries on, and then a podcast with the different people that he does stuff with. And so after all of that craziness of a week, we sat for 3 hours at the end.
We were exhausted too.
I was dead, man.
But I loved him.
I'm barely in that podcast, but I was there sitting there the whole time being like, what am I doing here? I just want to go to home.
But I do think it's interesting because if you looked at so much of what's being created, especially in film and in television, there's just such a dominant cultural narrative about feminism or women or the power and empowerment of women. And there's very, very little focus on conversations on masculinity. And if anything, it seems that there's an emasculating of men. And so I was surprised that that clip did so, so well. It tells me that there are a lot of people who are actually interested in a conversation about how do you become a healthy man? How do you become, a healthy expression of masculinity? And so that just, I feel like it just, we just poked a hole into a dark space and a light came through and said, this really matters to us.
It does feel like this has been a new era for men. Masculinity is important again. It was lost for a few years, maybe a decade. But it feels like men want to be men and women want men to be men. And I think there's a lot of conversations about identities, a lot of conversations around, you know, choosing your sexuality and who you are, who, how you're viewed. But the reality is there's only two options. You either choose to be a man or you choose not to be a man, or at least for men, you know. And I think this is now the era where men have to reclaim their masculine selves, right? They need to lead. They need to be powerful. It doesn't mean making women smaller. I think that's the reality, right? Is there's two, there's so many roles that men and women can play in a relationship. You know, we live in a modern era where women can work and be incredibly successful and far more successful than their partners. But it doesn't mean give up. It doesn't mean stop protecting the family and providing for the family and pouring into the family. But I think it's a new era, and hopefully it's a new era. I think there's a lot of encouragement, a lot of interest, a lot of discovery that has to be had. I was just connected with a guy named Nick Bear on Instagram. Yeah. One of our friends, Tim, just put us in a group message. And I mean, this guy has like meetups, running meetups, where he's got like 1,000 people, I think, showing up to do these runs together. And he's a fitness guy and building a community. And I think he's out in Nashville and in Austin. And it's just like, there's a different, we forget. I think we're in LA, we're in an artistic center, but men still want to be men. Yeah. And this is a place where I think, you know, and you've always done that. You've always talked about the heroic narrative. You mm-hmm. books like The Barbarian Way and The Way of the Warrior, and you've always been someone who's been about, you know, the journey.
Yeah, I just think that we're underestimating the importance of masculinity, because there will always be toxic, dominating, controlling, aggressive men who need to be neutralized. And they're not going to be neutralized by men who have abdicated their masculinity. And they're not going to be neutralized by cultural mores of, you need to treat women like this. And those men only understand the strength and power of other men. And I instantly remembered, I mean, when I was in getting my master's degree, I was in my 20s, maybe 25 years old. And I was standing outside of Billy Bob's, which was one of the largest clubs in the United States. And there might have been 500 people outside in line. It was just that popular of a place. And all of a sudden, the door of the club opens up. I'm outside. And a guy is dragging a girl out of the club by her hair.
Oof.
And he takes her out, goes to the right, and then takes her down an alley. And I'm looking, and there's like 500 people, and no one does anything. And so I ran down the alley. I intervened. I got in his way. He was huge, which I think is why maybe no one did anything, not even the bouncers in the club. And I look back and I realize, you know, if I had accepted a lot of our cultural norms, I would have not been prepared to step into that moment. And, you know, talk about perfect timing, because when I stepped in between them and we're about to go into a pretty profound physical altercation.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, three gigantic guys that played for Texas Christian University, TCU football team, just saw what happened. And they came up behind him and they said, we couldn't believe that you stepped into this. And they said, but we got it from here.
Yeah.
And while the guy I was looking at was huge, they were way bigger than him. And dominant, violent, aggressive, toxic men only respect men who actually have power. And I think when we try to act like we don't need healthy, masculine men, we're underestimating the reality of the world around us. And the reality of the world around us is that there will always be people like Putin in the world. The reality of the world around us is that there needs to be healthy, whole masculine men in the world. And even though it's not culture appropriate to say that women need protection from aggressive, violent men. And so I think that conversation is far more important than we could even begin to understand.
It's very interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because it does feel like the soft men out there tend to live in safety because there are strong men willing to do, you know, the hard work of protecting us.
Yeah, we experience freedom here because there are people, both men and women, who are in our military and they're defending our freedom, defending our peace and preserving it, and have done that historically, you know, and you know, and so I actually realize there are people who have tremendous practical courage and have made incredible sacrifices so that I could live a more elegant life. You know, you never have to look like you're aggressive if someone else is defending you. You know, you never have to develop your strength if someone else is being strong for you. And I just think it's important in some ways to go, and I'm just talking to men right now, you know, we need to never abdicate our unique place in the world where we should bring strength. That brings peace, that brings protection, that brings safety to other people. And, you know, I don't think that, I don't know why that seems so controversial to say. That's so strange.
Yeah. I mean, because there's a lot of soft guys out there that their feelings will be hurt when they read the, or they listen to this, when they're you know, it doesn't matter. We'll move on from that. But I find that the topics that do really well are really interesting to me. Like masculinity to me is like, it's a great topic, but not one that I would feel that would just blow up like that. But I love the quote. But another one of your quotes and something that I really find interesting is that people were really drawn to your conversation around overthinking. That it feels like that is something, that overthinking is something that the generation is dealing with, that the world is dealing with, that we have constant information bombarding us at any given moment, the moment you open your phone, the moment you wake up, the moment you turn on a TV, the moment you go outside, look at billboards, bus stops, buses, there's everything is turned into a place where we market. So how do you not overthink? We're constantly being oversold. There's things that we're always having to think about. But do you feel that people overthought 50 years ago?
Not like they are today. And part of the reason for that is that you live in a world with so many options. And because you have so many options, it just takes more energy to say no to all the different options, you know. And so I think this is one era, you know, where it's harder for you than it was for me. And it was harder for me than it was for someone in the generation before me. Because, you know, if you grew up on a farm in the middle of nowhere, and your father's a farm, and your uncles are farms, and your cousins are farmers, you know, you're going to be a farmer, and you're not really overthinking it. You're just, you know, you're just milking the cows and working the field, and this is what you do. And every once in a while, you have someone, you know, who's a farmer's son, and, you know, he just has an inner soul to say, I'm going to be an artist. You know, I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
But that became more rare.
That's how they got crop circles.
Yeah, they're doing the crop circles. They're the exception to the rule.
I'm going to make everyone believe there's aliens.
I'm just saying that when there are fewer options,
yes,
you don't overthink as much.
Right.
But now you are in a world where options are endless. And so you know there are a million different things you could do. And then on top of that, you have massive data. We thought the open accessibility of data would make life easier for people, but it actually makes life harder for people, because if you have too much information, it's like having no information. You're just data dumb. You know, it's because you've been data dumped. There's just way too much information in your brain and you don't know what to do. So I think overthinking is a natural negative outcome of the massive data that's available to us and the massive options that are available to us.
Mm. Yeah, it really is interesting, right? It slows down the process incredibly. But it also gives you an amazing ability to draw from information that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
We really got to get to this, don't we? We just got back from Denver.
Actually, we got back from Colorado Springs.
Well, I just got back from Denver. And if you really are being a stickler about detail, we flew to Denver, then Colorado Springs, then back to Denver. So, you know.
Well, I mean, a stickler for detail, we flew to Denver. We drove to Colorado Springs, drove back to Denver because our flights were canceled from Denver to Colorado Springs.
So this whole weekend was a mess. It was a mess. And it was really supposed to be a cute 24 hours in Denver and Colorado Springs. We take off from LA, which is a third world airport, to land in Denver for a quick, maybe like hour layover before we took off to Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs is what, like 80 miles from Denver?
I think it's a 45-minute flight or something like that.
Yeah, it's quick. I think you're up actually in the air for like 15 minutes, and then you're like the takeoff to the descent. I would know. I think it's a 45-minute flight altogether. But I think you're only really flying there.
I'm just saying I never got to experience
it. No, we never got to experience it. So wait, what happens? We get to the air. We're in the airport. They get us off the plane. And I noticed this. I wonder if you noticed this. But did you notice that when we landed, it was like somewhat clear, and then the moment, like maybe by the time we got to the gate, because we were on the tarmac for a little bit, it was just completely foggy all around us.
Yeah.
And the plane was starting to like ice up on the windows and the whole thing. And then by the time we were on there for a while, it started like snow started building up on the windows. And I realized like this, we might be in for an interesting adventure.
Yeah. I violated two cardinal rules I have. I don't fly to Chicago or Denver in the winter. And every time I've done that, something's
not
gone
well. Yeah.
And this is a great lesson in listening to your instincts or paying attention to past patterns, because years ago, I would fly a lot to Colorado Springs. And I knew that if I flew to Denver, I would be canceled to Colorado Springs. I even said that here in our office. I got talked out of it. They said, no, the road's going to be too slick for you to drive. But what we don't realize is the logic works both ways. If it's too slick to drive, it's too slick for them to land. They're just not going to land. And so I was mad at myself going, I knew this was a bad choice, that I should have gotten to rent a car in Denver and just taken, the risk of an hour and a half drive to Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
Which was not easy for us at first. But so it was 1 o'clock in the morning or midnight, we got off the plane. While they were still delaying it had been delayed now for 4 hours, I think it was.
Yes.
And finally at midnight, right when it hit midnight, I'm near the front of the cockpit, and I've been on enough flights, and I looked at the stewardess and I said, you're gonna have to change pilots, aren't you? And she looked at me like a deer in the headlights, and she was supposed to give me the information. She said, it just hit midnight, your pilots aren't allowed to fly, you have to get new pilots, right? She goes, yes, we're going to have to get new pilots. And they're still telling everybody they were going to take off. And that's when you and I popped off. And I said, they will not be able to find new pilots at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I was a few rows behind you, and I was sitting next to this really lovely girl. And I thought, honestly, she looked like she was super young, but she, I think probably college age, was when we got off the first flight and we realized things were bad. Basically, we deboarded the first flight that we got on, and then they delayed us like two or three more times.
Yeah.
And it was like gate number four or five.
They kept chaining us around, pulling us around.
And in between gate one to gate two, or plane one to plane two, she was like crying on the phone. I don't know if it was like to her boyfriend or to her mom. And then I was like, well, I'm about to be sat next to her in the next flight because we're keeping the same seats. So we sit down on the next one. I was like, hey, are you okay? And she's like, yeah. And she's like really sad. I flew in to go. Flew in to go see my boyfriend. He's in the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. And I was like, it's going to be okay. Like, Kenny's going to come pick you up, or like, what's the deal? And she's like, yeah, he's the one who convinced me to fly. I usually rent a car and drive. And I was like, well, where are you from? And she said Fargo. And I didn't realize Fargo was a real place. I thought it was just a TV show.
And you could fly in from Fargo.
That it had airplanes there. I thought that you still had to,
take moose.
Yes. Huskies all the way down. But we ended up talking, and then, it got to the point where she ended up actually spilling water all over my seat on accident. And that's when I called you and was like, we need to go. It's time. I have nowhere to sit, and it's time to go, and let's get off this thing. And then they gave us the option, like not long after I saw you talking to the steward. If you is it like the egress thing where if you want to get off, you're more than welcome to get off. We can't keep you on here.
Yeah.
Because that would be, prison. And
because they've gotten in trouble in the past.
They've gotten in trouble in the past. And I kind of tapped you on the shoulder. I was like, I think we it's time to go. If we leave now, we'll get a rental car in an hour, and then we'll still have
to. Well, it was midnight. The likelihood of getting a rental car was really low.
But I was working on that on the phone. Yeah.
Yeah. So even there, that was funny. Then we're going to budget. And then they told us on the way there, budget's out of cars. So we're dropping off at Avis. We're going, well, why would we go to Avis? Well, it's owned by the same people.
Like, so that's going to be out of cars too. And then we convinced the bus driver to drop us off.
Well, then we saw like 100 people in line at Avis.
I think it was like more like 200.
200 in budget. And so, we convinced the driver to drop us off at Hertz. Yeah.
And he was like, well, I can't pull in there because it's not my company. So I'm going to drop you off in the middle of the street.
So he drops us off in the middle of the street while it's snowing at 1 o'clock in the morning in Denver.
And he's like, good luck. Good luck. good luck. Take a left. Take a, drop us off.
Yeah. And he said, walk in front of me so that I can see you. You know? So, and then this big giant bus is coming our way.
And then you got.
I'm like, I don't know if he's going to be able to stop. So it was a little tricky. We walked the mush across at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
We go to Hertz. Then they tell us we can't get the car here because they don't have our numbers.
Oh, no. He said, are you a gold member? And yes. I'm like, I don't know if I'm a
And I know school. I'm a gold member, but he's like, well, what's your number? I didn't have the number on me. I'm going, why can't you just look it up in the computer? And he says, you can't be here. So he sends us off,
humiliates us.
Yeah. And then, so we're now walking again in the mush across at 1:30 in the morning, going to the other part of Hertz. And there's 100 people in that line.
And that's, it was so many people. I told you, I was like, hey, Dad, I'm going to have to express myself. Like I'm the next person who looks at me wrong. It's over. I'm upset. I'm angry.
So then we get my gold number. By that time, while we're in the other line. Yep. So we walk back to the gold section, and then there's a woman there that's so drunk that she's trying to get a rental car.
That was crazy. She looked normal. She looked normal and wasn't like sloppy, but she was what, like 30 or
50? Yeah.
And she just, but then she kept, like, when she looked normal, there was nothing about her that was unnormal or abnormal. But then when she spoke, it was like she was speaking English, but like random words were getting picked out of the dictionary.
Yeah.
And she was like, it didn't make any, she's like landlines.
And she wasn't lying. She and they were like, well, yes, I've had a drink.
Oh yeah. And the guy, the young man goes, well, ma'am, have you had something to drink? She goes, well, yeah. And he goes, well, you're not getting a rental car today. He's like, but landlines. I just can't remember who kept saying landlines. And he's like, landlines. And people, and it was like to the point where the woman who was checking us out, like checking us out on the computer, we kept like looking over her shoulder and like laughing.
Yeah.
And well, yeah, so it was really bad. It was really bad.
So we finally get a rental car that we've reserved, but they don't have it.
What time
so
is
So then
this,
we have to spend 20, 30 minutes while they're looking for a car to give us.
I'm going
to
pull this up, this time stamp. I took a video. So,
and what's really funny is now it's 1:30 in the morning and we get United sending us a, we're so sorry for the 6 hours of delay and the cancellation. No, it hadn't canceled yet. So we're offering you a free meal voucher. So they sent us a $20 meal voucher at midnight or 1 a.m. when
United?
Everything's closed
great.
Anyway.
Yep.
And we're getting off the plane.
Yeah.
And then at 1:30, while we're driving to Colorado Springs around 2 o'clock, they sent a notice, we're so sorry, the flight has been canceled.
So an hour and a half later.
But they pretended it was being delayed for like 6 hours.
Ugh.
Moving terminals, changing planes, quote, changing pilots. And I've done this enough where I knew it was going to be canceled. We should have left hours before. But I will say this, since we should have some kind of learning out of this story.
What's the practical? What plane do you need? What plane are you delaying to get off of?
Well, for me, it's the gambler's dilemma.
The gambler's dilemma. You did talk about this.
Yeah, where every time we chose to stay, it was harder for us to get off, even though getting off was the right decision.
We were deep in this thing.
The more you make bad decisions, the more you make bad decisions to try to validate your bad decision. It's very hard to just cut bait and go, I made 5 bad decisions in a row and I just got to own it, get off the plane and make a new decision. Fortunately, we did that before almost every single person on that plane who got off at 1:30 in the morning, had to deplane in an airport that was closed where there would be no hotel space for them and no rental cars. Because you hold on to that gambler's dilemma, holding on to you lose, and then you lose, then you lose, then you lose. And it's harder for a person to give up when they're losing.
It was interesting because I at one point I was like, hey, I think we need to go. And you're like, okay, should we go? And I was like, wait, but I don't know. What do you think? Because it got to the point where I'm like, this is midnight now.
Yeah.
And by the time we get to rent a car, we don't have one. Now we have to get one. And then it's going to be 1 a.m. And then 1 a.m. we're going to drive 2 hours to get to 3 a.m. And if this plane does take off, it can get there in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So then but then we should have probably just walked right off that plane. And when it was delayed the first time and just rented a car and just taken the 2 hour thing. And thank God we both saw a Shake Shack and went, let's have a burger real quick before the very first delay.
All right. So,
and we sat, we had food and we hung. Well, I want to finish the story.
Okay, go ahead.
So then we finally get the rental car at like 1:15 in the morning. It's not the right car. And it's this like little blue Bronco Sport. They swore had four-wheel drive, but honestly, the windshield wipers were barely working. And the whole car is covered in ice. The guy kind of like tosses you the keys, like, all right.
There you go.
And I'm like, the whole thing is covered in ice. Like, I'm scraping this thing
off.
They
didn't even bother to scrape off the ice.
Nothing. Oh, right. Nothing. Hertz did us dirty.
But that's gold member. And so so we're going to shout out to Shake Shack, but United and Hertz, you have a lot of work to do.
Yes. Yes. United knows. But we finally got to our hotel room at what, 4 in the morning?
3:30 in the morning, something like that.
Yeah.
I think I was in bed by 4.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And then had to speak that morning for the business event that we committed to go do for our friends up there. And so it was a very short night.
Short night. It was quiet.
And to be there and to speak, you know, for
two of our friends.
Guys that, you know, I work with one-on-one in coaching, and which we love being there for that. And it was worth the sacrifice.
It was, yeah, it was great.
But it would have been very easy to give up. It would have been very easy just to get a hotel in Denver and tell the guys, hey, you know, we just couldn't make it.
Yeah.
I think one, you know, a great attribute to have in life to build for yourself is just simply resilience. You know, you just don't quit. You just keep solving a problem. So when you look at the whole night, there were a lot of problems, but really we just solved one problem at a time.
Yeah.
And we had to try to solve that problem 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Before we were able to solve it.
Yeah.
And I say we, I mean you.
No, I mean, shout out to our team. Shout out to Lisa. Shout out to the team.
Because
honestly, even just being on the plane, I could text, but I couldn't like Google things. So just, you know, just you're in this weird spots on a runway. And if we didn't have the team helping us, it would have been impossible. But it was definitely a learning lesson. And we were laughing the whole time. And we'll throw in a video. I posted it on my Instagram.
I thought it was hilarious.
Of us just like trucking it.
It was more fun. It was fun because we did it together.
It was so much more fun.
And that is just a great life lesson that even the worst moments can be a lot of fun if you do it with the right people.
100%.
You know, if I'd been by myself, I think it would have been like a nightmare experience for me.
Well, at one point when I saw that the budget line and then I saw the Hertz situation, I was like, we might not make it to Colorado Springs. Because like, there's no way we're getting to rent a car in the morning at 6 in the morning if we get to a hotel at 3 in Denver. Like, it was just becoming chaotic. But you are a really resilient person. Like, you just kind of push through. So what is it about it? What is it about you that where you've mastered resilience? Or do you feel like you've mastered resilience?
I do think I'm an incredibly resilient person. I'll give myself that. I can't quit. And I hate quitting.
You hate quitting.
And I don't really appreciate quitters.
No. I quit all the time. I'm like, bye.
And this is a conversation I have with people I love. And, you know, I don't like people who make commitments and break them easily. Man, I've had this conversation, you know, with people going, why are you breaking that commitment today? I hate when people cancel the day off. And I go, well, I didn't know this and this. And I said, look, if you have a hard time keeping commitments, just don't make them.
Yeah.
You know, but if you make commitments, you need to keep them. And I think that's actually shaped my life. I realized I'm not good at breaking commitments, so I make as few of them as possible.
You make a lot of commitments.
Well,
I make as few of them as possible.
I do make a lot of commitments. I just keep them all.
You make a lot of commitments that you keep.
Yeah.
You never cancel unless something real happens and you're like, hey, I'm so sorry, but this has, I got to adjust something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would rather hang out by myself. So like, there are people I refuse to make commitments with though, because I know how important commitments are to them and they take them to heart.
Yeah.
I am not that person for you because you will hate me.
It is very hard for me to say no to people. Like, it's very painful for me because I always feel like, oh, they're going to take it personally, or they think I don't like them or don't value what they're doing. And I really do value people and do like them and want to help. I want to help everyone in the world. So it takes a lot of discipline for me. To say no.
Yeah, no is hard. We have a rule when we jump on phone calls together. And like, hey, just don't give away the farm. Like, I like the farm.
Because I would give away the farm.
You would give away the farm. And we jumped on a call, a pitch last week, a pitch with someone we already know. So we're just pitching the format of how we're going to do this next consulting season with this company. And you were like, I'll throw in this and I'll do this. And you know what, I'll coach. And I was like, dad, I think the Wi-Fi is breaking up. And it was like a funny moment because we obviously all know each other. But you were, what is that about? You're just, that's why when we sell something or we put something online, I I always try to keep it as simple as possible because I do know that you will over-deliver, right? If we undercommit, I know you'll over-deliver. I know that you always bring more value or do your best to bring the most value to something in the moment.
Yeah, I'm the guy, if I owned a restaurant and you ordered a lasagna and a pizza, I'd make sure you also got dessert.
Yes, yes. You know?
And then and it's, oh, and you didn't try the ravioli, so I'm just going to give you that as a gift.
Yes, yeah.
I'm definitely that guy.
You're that guy. You're why the restaurant business is insane. It's insane. Do you find that, because I'm the opposite, I'm a little bit more maybe closed. I'm very generous.
You are generous. But you would say to one person, you bought the pizza, you get the pizza. But then you'd go to the other guy, I think you're really good, so I'm going to help you start your restaurant.
Yeah.
You're funny that way. It's like the person who expects it, you don't give them anything.
No.
But the person who's like working really hard quietly and you just want to help that person so much.
I help that person. Yeah, I would love to. I had something. Oh, I was on the plane or I was at the airport coming back to LA because I stayed in Denver one extra night, hung out with some friends and it was great. Denver is cold. Yeah, Denver's cold.
It was 12 degrees while we were sloshing around at 1:30 in the morning.
It was cold. And there were no Mindshift fans apparently in Denver because no one, I saw nobody. Usually there's usually no city that we go to where I'm like, I don't meet someone that's like, hey, I like Mindshift.
Yeah.
But
we could have used the Mindshift fan.
We could have used the Mindshift fan. I almost did throw up like a Hail Mary on Instagram and be like, anybody want to drive us?
Yeah.
Come pick us up from the Denver airport. But I had someone reach out to me and send me his new company, like his new apparel company. And I don't really know this person, just Instagram friend. Hey, will you give me feedback? I value your feedback on design. And I was in a good mood, but I was also like in a real mood about it. And I was like, hey, if I'm going to help, how much honesty do you really want? He's like, just tell me everything. So I was like, okay, don't like the logo. Don't like this. Don't like this. Don't like this. Don't like this. And I screenshot everything, kind of drew around it. I was on, I'm on my phone. And he responded the next morning. He was responding in the moment because I don't like sending feedback and then waiting to like, I can't wait for this person to read it. Like, let's just do it now, do it live. And then by the next morning, he changed everything, did all the adjustments, made it, I think, 5 times better. It's some room to grow. But it was really interesting, one, to kind of exercise that muscle of, I really love helping people to flesh out creativity and flesh out business strategies and kind of how they approach things. But it was fun to like have someone listen. Be like, ah.
But they shouldn't ask you if they don't actually want feedback.
Yeah, well, he sent me the completed stuff and I was like, oh, you've already made all this. He's like, no, it's all spec. It's all the design. Like, I haven't actually put anything into production. I was like, ah, because you kind of, that's the worst time to ask for advice.
Yeah.
When you've already done it. But what do you think? It's, I don't know, you already did it.
Yeah, so you're not looking for advice or input, you're just looking for affirmation.
Yeah. Yeah, do you want to get better or do you want me to just applaud you?
Yeah, just when someone's already, I hate it when someone asks me after they finished everything, what do you think? You know, I love your opinion. I'm like, you don't want my opinion, you want my affirmation, which is okay. You know,
how do you ask for affirmation then?
You shouldn't ask for affirmation.
Yeah.
You should let the affirmation.
Well, no, but chefs do it. Did you enjoy it? You do it. You do it. Oh, my man, you do it all the, you do it.
You should do it.
Whenever I go to your house and you cook a steak, for some reason, steaks are like, it's your sensitive spot. But like, if there's ever a new guest, I might have overcooked that a little bit. And then you're like hovering for the first couple bites. How is it? I can cook you a new one. I have a fresh steak.
I don't know a chef that isn't like that.
I don't know. I can't. But what is it? But you
over. You have no taste.
But you're very good at grilling, but even then you overthink it sometimes. So why? Is it because you care about it?
I care about it and I didn't perfect my process. So I'm uncertain about it. So I see the flaws in my process. So I'm not sure if I'm going to get the outcome I wanted because it's sort of like, basically you're depending on magic. If you don't have a really great process and you want the same consistent outcome. So I think some of my cooking is just, I'm praying that some fairy dust will drop on it and it will be better than it should be. And sometimes it comes out amazing and then sometimes it doesn't. And, but I know the insecurity comes because I know my process isn't excellent. I need to be better at the process and I won't be as insecure about the outcome.
I didn't say you were insecure. I said you were overthought. You said you're insecure, and so we'll leave it there.
Yeah, looking for that affirmation.
Yeah, there are things about, you know, I'm the same. I there are things about that, you know.
But yet, I don't think I've ever asked you what you think. I don't really ask for affirmation for my books.
No, of course. Yeah, I get draft one. Hey, will you read this? I don't know if it's any good.
No, I don't let anybody read my drafts.
I have 7 drafts from Mind Shift.
No, only after it's finished.
No,
and then when I'm in the editing process.
Oh, no, I've read the first chapter after you were done with it. What are you talking about?
You may be very exclusive.
Maybe it was 5 chapters. I read an early
yeah.
draft.
Yeah, you're probably one of the first people to get to because you will actually read it.
Yeah, no, and I was like, oh, and yeah. I gave you notes. Honestly, it was also one of the best books early on. It was already one of the best books you've already had already written.
Right, but when you're saying something to someone before it's finished, you're not really looking for affirmation.
You were looking for like-
I'm refining.
Yeah, you were like, give me your thoughts. How does this read?
Yeah.
You know, you were actually asking for real questions.
Yeah, no, I mean, when the book goes out, I don't really-
There's not much else you can do.
I don't live on the affirmation because you would just die, you know.
It's true, it's true, it's true.
You have to believe that you've created something worthwhile and you have to let that be your affirmation.
Yeah, you really do. You really have to just trust the fact that you created something worth it.
You know, although it's even there is a danger. Like I know I have a lot of friends who write books and I go, that's an okay book, but they think it's like the best in the world. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be that guy. You know, maybe I wrote an okay book and I think it's the best in the world. And I just basically go, have I communicated the things that I think will change people's lives? And then I'm living with the hope of that.
I read something interesting. It was like a little Japanese proverb, something on Instagram that I saw. Can I read it to you?
Yeah.
It said, here in Japan, we have a concept called yutori, and it is spaciousness. It's leaving early enough to get somewhere, so when you get there, you have time to look around.
I love that.
It's really nice, isn't it?
That's so good.
I was thinking, how do I apply that to my creative process with things? And it really is like getting to the work as early as you can. Like we know you have a new book coming out in August, a little bit before August, but it's got to be ready by August. And so sometimes we'll be behind the ball. Like just Arena Conference was last minute, it was 6 weeks. And so merch was happening up until the week of, you know? And that was just happening. It was happening on flights, it was happening on my phone. It was like, you had a great team on the ground getting stuff done. But like for a book like this to have, was it yutori, that ability to just explore and spaciousness and have time to think and breathe. There is something about getting there early, right? Leaving on time, leaving enough space to be able to like enjoy the room that you're in.
See, that space for me is at the beginning process.
Yeah, can you open up about that a little bit?
Yeah, because whenever I'm writing a book, the first major process in writing a book is not writing a book.
What is it?
It's thinking about the book. It's letting the ideas ruminate inside of you. It's letting there be enough space inside of you where that universe is being created and all the pieces start to coalesce in some unique way. And I start remembering stories and remembering principles, and I'm in the shower and I remember, you know, something I saw. In fact, I was actually in the shower and I remembered a talk I heard in 2006 when I was in, I think Edinburgh, Scotland, and I pulled it up
on the orchestras,
on conductors. Yeah. And so then I'm able to track that down, find it. And so a lot of times when I'm writing a book, I'm just allowing myself to be open. And then I'm in the sauna at this, you know, club, you know, health club, and I'm sitting there in my mind thinking through human frequencies, and then I all of a sudden I hear a conversation that people start having about the frequencies in the room that they're experiencing. And you won't even remember those if you're not opening up.
Like
those conversations suddenly happen the moment you're paying attention.
Yeah.
And then you begin to see connecting points everywhere. You know, then all of a sudden I see this medical journal where they're using sound vibrations to heal the human body. And you know, that could be actually become a literal approach to engaging cancer. And you know, so the moment you open yourself up, all these seemingly disconnected things start floating into your solar system. And I think that's what that concept is creating space and to allow everything you've ever absorbed in a lifetime to begin to emerge and come together and connect.
And I think, you know, there's something about that, right? Like when you create a project, it's kind of similar to like how a computer, you can open up and create like a new folder and you can dump images into that folder. Like I create like a space in my mind where now that this project lives in my mind in a certain space. And then I, when I find images, you're like kind of collecting those images or those concepts into that space and filling that space with whether it's like any kind of sensory thing. Cause the thing I've been really trying to work on is I woke up to a really beautiful DM about like, how would you break down creativity if you were to like teach it and talk about it. And, you know, I don't know, but I do think it would be like the rooms, some of the rooms and the spaces inside your mind and how you fill them. And there are certain things, whether it's art or music or film, that actually limit what I can put inside that space, right? There's like certain emotions that happen or certain frequencies that you like inhibit into your body or your mind that kind of remove it. I was talking to you about this even last night. I was like, last year was like more of a stressful year for me with relational stuff. And I felt like I was my least creative self. Even though we had massive wins, we launched the arena, we had this amazing community, made so many friends, but I was in a place of like creating from emptiness and creating from exhaustion than creating from like a place of like love and joy and excitement. It was more of like, I gotta do this versus, you know, I get to do this. Mm-hmm. And while having a lot of fun, still being rather like maybe, overthinking things or underthinking things, not having any time for any space. And so it is that, right? And like, and how do you find people that help you create space? But then we live in a city where it's chaotic. It's chaos. Like there's always cars, there's always people, there's always crazy people in the corners, there's always rain or sunshine or snow. We're always in the chaos. And I had this thought while we were in Colorado, it was like the cold, the winter does not care about your feelings.
No.
Or your time or where you need to be and when you need to be there. Right. And that's so much about like life. Like life just keeps going. It keeps moving forward. We're constantly having to push forward. We're getting pulled forward by some unknown force that is drawing us into the future. We have to decide if we're going to go with it or if we're going to like rebel against it and try to stay, but we lose every time. So how do we create space in our future to, you know, bring in the things that make us more creative?
So how do you do it? Just practically.
No.
What are something
my,
you do?
My immediate thought when I read this and when I was in Denver was it's sensory for me initially. It's just like being in touch with the things I'm seeing, I'm smelling, I'm feeling, and editing things that feel monochromatic in a way or feel like machine made, like a search for things that feel raw and feel independent and feel unique, and then building on top of that. Right. And layering that with like conversations and relationships. Like oftentimes we'll talk about, we were sitting having a breakfast burrito yesterday and we're talking about the cover for your new book or like some creative around it. Who knows if that will end up even being close to what we get, but we had this kind of, we left space for just like, just vamping on ideas and getting excited. And then we would switch to the shoes Trump made. And then we'd switch to a movie we saw or a TV show we saw. And then we kind of would collaborate. But I do think it is a lot of it has to do with space and the space you give yourself. And not so much the space to do nothing, but the space for you to not commit to anything in that moment, but to begin to start things, you know, and to like seeing what, and like pulling the thread of a sweater, like seeing how it could unravel. Did I answer the question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A little bit? Yeah. No, very much. I was thinking as well, you know, sometimes we don't think about this, but there are people who give you like psychic space. Like there are some people that they just are so demanding emotionally.
Yeah.
That they suffocate you. And then there are people who like when they come into your life, there's just a lot of affirmation and a lot of love. And it seems like they just give you more space to create and to be yourself. And,
yeah,
you know, and I think when you described last year, I think you were in a psychological space where you didn't have the space to dream and imagine and create. So you're just, then you end up becoming more in survival mode. You're just punching out what's necessary.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even mean just dating. I mean, in friendships, like you can have, there are certain friends that you can have in life where they just know a part of their role is to lighten you up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just to be in your life, to create a little bit of fun and to create some joy and to create some excitement. And, you know, and you don't realize they're actually you don't realize it, but they're creating that space inside of you. You know, because when I see you hanging out with like Roy or, you know, and some of the boys, you know, and even, you know, just recently you hang out with Matt. And when I see you hang out with some of those, you know, friends you've had over the years, you don't even realize it, how you come out of those lighter. You come out of those more imaginative, more creative, more inventive, because those friends have just, in a sense, created soul space where you're going, I can take a deep breath. Life is good. I can enjoy it. And then you become more creative.
Yeah, I definitely become, you know, people talk about like protecting your energy. I'm like, I just more protect my mental space, right? Like if there's someone who can be around and just be easy and be relaxed and spend time, and there's not this like force to talk or this pressure to do anything. And the same with you, like you kind of, I think you approach books like Picasso would have approached, like canvases. You start creating some empty space and then you start filling it with color and things and music and building the world and ecosystem. But for me, I think people create, you're able to like empty the tank a little bit with good people. You know, it takes away, it's like a good filter for your body. It's like your kidneys. It's like an extension of your kidneys. It takes away the toxins. It brings in some new nutrients. It evolves you and but then also at the same time, it's like when those people, the same people who bring you goodness can also go through something hard and they can take away from that too. But that's part of it, right? You create like a relational silo for energy. Like, you know, you build moments together. Like me and you can go through a lot of hard things together because we've had a lot of good moments together. So it doesn't take away from the quality of our relationship, right? And it's finding those people and being able to do life with them. But being creative is a tough thing. Wait, we've been going 45 minutes. How much longer do you want to go?
Maybe we'll land the plane.
Should we land the plane?
Yeah. In all this, I would say that really what we're really describing is, because you asked me earlier about being resilient, and then you're talking about how to create open spaces for creativity and growth, which I think actually are interconnected. Then we're talking about our journey through Colorado Springs. You keep saying Denver. That's because you had dinner with friends there. So that was your landing spot. And I had a meeting in Colorado Springs.
We spent the most time in Denver.
So Denver was just my transitional spot for me. And but it's so much about interpretation. That trip could be interpreted by us as the worst experience of our life. And we laughed and we talked and we enjoyed. And so even a horrible series of events became a really great experience for us along the way. And I actually think that that's the key of resilience, is that resilient people interpret hard experiences as either joyful or learning experiences, or, you know, they just reinterpret them in some positive way. And I don't mean by just being dismissive of it or lying about it. They actually find a way to enjoy it or to grow through it.
Yeah.
And that's why I do think people who have close friendships are more resilient. Yeah, because, you know, we do so much together, and it's not just father and son, it's also friend and friend. And we even were self-aware in that, going, I'm glad I'm doing this with you.
Yeah.
You know, and we started laughing, and then, you know.
No, I think most of the, I think it was like, once we got past the like indecisiveness of like, should we commit to this?
Off, like taking a deep breath, both of us.
Yeah, once we got off that plane, I mean, we were the first people to leave the plane.
Yeah.
And like leave the section. We pushed through that exit door and we're out there, and I was like, no going back. It closed, you know?
Yeah.
And we both took a breath and we're like, we're so happy we're out of there. And once we committed to it.
And what's so funny is that we were happy without any idea what would happen next.
What we were about to go through.
And which is a great reminder that the only way people change is that the pain of staying the same has to be more powerful than the pain of change. And, you know, we were enduring the pain of delay and delay and delay and delay, but it was never a strong enough pain to cause us to risk getting off the plane when we didn't really know how things were going to play out on the other end.
Yeah.
And I think it's so true. Like, the mystery is on the other side, but we were pretending there was certainty on the plane. But actually, that was a more dangerous spot to be in. There was no future staying on that plane.
No.
And the only potential future was getting off that plane. And if you hear nothing else on this podcast, I think that's the principle for life. Most of the time, we sit on the plane that's going nowhere, thinking that's the safest decision in our life. You got to get off the plane that's not going anywhere and step into the unknown, into uncertainty, into mystery, and go create a future. Because it doesn't happen when you're just sitting waiting for someone else to move you forward.
Mm, that's so good. Okay, we're going to close it out. That was amazing. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, so much fun. And I cannot wait. A week from now, we have the Mosaic Conference here in Hollywood. At yes. Mosaic. It's going to be so exciting.
Yes.
It's going to be jam-packed. It's going to be really, really beautiful. We have the
We're Arena doing a Summit. Mind shift at the conference.
Oh, we're doing a mind shift podcast.
At the conference.
At the conference. Yeah.
I don't know how that happened, but we're doing it.
I have an idea we can do it on, so I'll tell you later.
What's the idea? No, it's just, what is it?
I did a talk last year on epiphanies, and I thought we should do our mind shift on where do new ideas come from? How do you?
That's great. Did we not talk about this? Did we talk about this?
Never.
I was literally working on a graphic today because the next arena conference is called the Arena of New Ideas.
Yeah, because you know I thought, you know, conference theme is out of our minds.
Yeah.
I still think this... this breakdown I did on how to have an epiphany is one of the most important things I've ever actually created, and we haven't really developed it very much. And I thought it'd be so much fun to break down some of that and talk about how to create an idea generating environment,
oof,
both
I like
internally
that.
And in on your team and your community.
Obviously, if we do a mind shift at the conference, we'll release it here on the podcast. But you know, we want to include you guys in the process. Is that's a talk from Mosaic, right?
Yeah.
Was it over the summer? When was it? I remember it, but I don't remember when.
It was right after I came back from Costa Rica in June of 2023. Because
you did Costa Rica this year or last year. Oh, last year.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Because I remember I had that epiphany while I was in Costa Rica and I wrote it on the plane back. And then I did the talk. I think it might be the last Sunday in June.
Okay. Well, we'll link the talk in this and in the bio of this. But I'm really excited. I think Mosaic Conference is going to be amazing. It's exciting being a part of the team. And then obviously it's just our church.
And don't forget the summit.
The summit's coming up February 28th.
Next week with Edwin Arriave.
Yeah.
So if you haven't registered for the summit, if you're not a part of the arena, register for the summit.
Yeah, and the summits are $150
yeah.
and for 2 hours. Easy. And I think it's amazing. And we'll end... and you get to be a part of the Q&A section, which is also great. And there's just some good people on this. So if you're interested in it, that will be in the bio as well of this episode. And we'll see you next week.
All right. Hey, it's been great.
Rate and review this podcast. If you're on Spotify, if you're on Apple Podcast, if you're on YouTube, you can subscribe and thumbs up it and leave us a comment. We go back and we check those things. Spotify, go in. That's where I listen to our podcast. I went back and listened to an episode on my drive in Denver, when I dropped you off from the airport, I was like, "Oh, this is actually a good episode. We're saying good things. We're doing good things." So, shout out to you guys and seeing you guys, and we'll see you guys at conference.
All right, have a great week.
You too.